Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray. I'm the host, and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Phil from the Zen Center in Palo Alto. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Michael. It's very good to be here with you.
And I understand that we're going to have a little discussion today, and you have some questions.
Yes, I was just wondering lately, Michael, exactly how did this radio show get started?
That's a great question, Phil. And I don't have a chance to talk about it all the time. And so it's fun to share a little bit about the background and the history of it. And so I think it was way back in 2001 or so, around then, and I was new to practice, sort of within a year or two. And I knew enough to know that this is really good information. Practice has really good, helpful, kind of concrete, down-to-earth information. And I thought, you know, everybody should know about this. It's really important. And so I learned about the radio station at Stanford University, and I got involved with a DJ training program there, which was, I think, a couple months, and you learn how to move the buttons and how to talk and what to say and when to do the music. And we applied for a slot, and we got a slot. And I think that was sort of the beginning of, I think it was 2002, end of 2002, beginning of 2003, I think. And at some point in there, I was talking with Sherry, and she got very excited and involved with it. And we kind of got going from there. Do you remember some of those?
Yeah, I do. I remember listening to them on Stanford, and they were very good, sometimes a little hard to hear on the regular radio. Would that be one of the reasons you switched over to the Internet platform?
We, as you know, over a couple of years, we've been on a couple different platforms, beginning with Stanford and then at World Talk Radio and now at TalkShoe. And with the changes in the Internet, you know, there have been some new technological possibilities that weren't available before. And so as those technologies have evolved, we've adapted and switched to platforms that feel like they best fit what we're trying to do. And you mentioned alluded to having difficulty hearing sometimes. And that reminds me of some of the experiences that I've had over the years with some of the technical challenges. And for me, it's been really wonderful because early on at Stanford, we had one show, and those of you who have listened to the old archives know this one, where we just couldn't get the callers online for, I think, about half the show. Sherry can probably remember that. And it was really challenging. And for me, what was so wonderful about that was having Sherry model the practice in that moment. I never got a sense that there's something wrong, this needs to be different. What's the matter with you, Michael? Why can't you work this out? So I had a lot of that self-talk going, but there was none of that coming from Sherry. So it was really, really helpful, very reassuring to know that we're always practicing. On the radio show, we talk about practice and we model practice.
Yes, I'm always amazed and impressed when once in a while when something goes wrong, you have a little difficulty, that actually both you and Sherry seem pretty calm and have quite the radio mannerisms that are required. And I would say that the practice is working for you, even with the radio show.
It's a really wonderful experience, as you're talking about. And what comes up for me as you're talking is that sense we talk about all the time of having no control. So we do all this work ahead of time to get the radio show working, and is the computer working? Is the Internet working? Is the phone working? Yes, and is it scheduled? And all of these things. And as you know, we do as much preparation as we can, and then life happens. And to the best of our abilities, we show up and participate with that.
Yes, and it does happen very nicely. And it seems to me that as I listen to the radio show, that there are many callers and callers from all over that must really enjoy the show. And can you tell us some about, like, where some of the callers have come from over this period of time, and I know it's more than just there's several countries involved, and maybe how many, and maybe even how many shows you've done, if you can remember any of those statistics. It just might be interesting for our listeners.
Yeah, it is really fun, and it is really interesting. And when we were at Stanford, we would reapply for our time slot every 3 months or so. And so in those applications, I would be talking about how many callers we had, where they came from. I haven't done that as much recently. And it's really fun to know that practice is universal. It's speaking to the human experience. And so, as you know, we have callers from England. We have callers from, I think, Sweden and Australia and England. And of course, all across the U.S. And so it is really fun and exciting. And the same way we have Sangha or community in person, we have this cyber Sangha, the open-air radio show Sangha. And I feel really close to that, and that's really important to me. And I think there was another aspect to your question, but I don't remember it at this point. Oh, right. So how many? Yes. I haven't kept track of them. And the thing that does come to mind is that in the past there have been some statistics about the archives, and people do regularly go to the archives and listen to the show. And as Sherry has talked about, it's a great resource for people who aren't physically close to the monastery or physically close to practice. And I've heard on some retreats that, in fact, people have listened to the entire archive, and perhaps twice. Yes.
Well, I think it's a really wonderful thing that we offer the Sangha through the radio. And it's true, listening and being able to call in does make, I think, all of us feel really close and like one Sangha. And even though we don't know any of the names, our faces to the names for the most part, when a person especially comes on more than once, it's like you feel like, oh, you know that person, and you wonder how are they doing now with their situation. And it's really actually a wonderful experience for not only for you and Sherry, but of course for all of us listeners and participators.
Yeah, yes, it is really fun. And as people call in, we do get a sense to know them as they call back, and it's really that sense of getting to know people in the way that we do in practice without socializing, and yet to me it's so much more intimate, and it feels so much closer and so much more connected to me. And so that's one aspect of practice that I really enjoy. There was another aspect to that, and I forget it, that was occurring to me about it. But it's just, yeah. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. What has occurred to me often, and I think I say this regularly on the air, is that I project so much courage and willingness onto the people who call in. And when I'm open to it, I can really relate to everyone who is calling in and what they're sharing.
Yes, there's so much in what everybody shares that is so similar to all our processes, and it does seem like a worldwide group, like when we're all sitting around having group. It's like having group with the entire world, anybody that would want to tune in at any given time. So can you recall any just things that stand out, maybe just about the show in general, some anecdote or one of your favorite shows or anything that you might remember about any of the, like a little story, I don't know, just something you might enjoy telling us?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do, what comes to mind, I do remember one call in particular, and it was really, I think Sherry may have described it as one of those swords of wisdom moments, and it was really, I was there listening, and to me it was just really profound in that, in those moments in practice, and I project this as one of them, when Sherry is just really speaking to what is so and true in the moment, and I project kind of a real clarity that just kind of, pushes all the clouds away, and that really, that one of those great moments where everything becomes clear. And that was one particular one. And I know it's happened on other occasions as well. And for me, often there's a sense after the radio show of really the privilege of having participated in people's lives that are doing practice. And what a joy and privilege, as I don't know what other word to use, privilege of this ability to share with people in this way.
Yeah, it seems like such a generous gift that Sherry gives all of us, and you also through your time. But just the idea that any one of us can call in and have basically a guidance with the guide is quite amazing and wonderful that she gives us this time for that. So, you know, we can all bow in deep gratitude for that. Okay, so thank you, Michael.
Great, thank you, Phil. It's been a pleasure to talk about the history of the radio show. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry. Good evening, Sherry. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Nothing to it, huh?
Nothing to it.
I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Sure.
I'm absolutely great. I'm having the most wonderful experience.
Oh, good.
I don't know what the weather is like where you are, but where I am, it is pouring rain.
Oh, pouring rain.
Which is truly extraordinary. You know, it's been so dry here already.
Yes.
And it's very troublesome when you live in big forest fire country, and it starts, you know, you have no rain all through the month of April and all through the month of May. It makes fire season very, very long.
Yes.
And so this afternoon, just I don't know that anybody expected it, but everything just opened up and poured. And here's the really fun and exciting part. We had people down in Angel's Camp, wasn't raining there, had people driving in from Murphy's, wasn't raining there, and they all reported that there's just this giant cloud right over the monastery, and it's just pouring.
Wow.
So I just feel blessed, more so even than usual.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, it almost sounds like divine intervention.
It does. That's exactly the way it feels. Yeah, just lots of good things happening.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
How about you?
I'm good.
Right.
You know, the funny thing is that I see forecasts for rain regularly where I live in California, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, they just say it to get our hopes up.
I don't know what it is.
Shake us up or something. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So this one, I think everybody missed. Now, I could be wrong. You know, maybe everybody knew but me. But anyway, it's just delightful.
Great. Great.
Yeah.
And I understand you're just back from Pittsburgh as well.
That's true. Lovely Pittsburgh, where they offered us some of the most gorgeous weather we've ever seen.
Oh, my goodness.
And right before that, I was in New York. So,
wow.
All of it, just absolutely gorgeous. Lovely people, lovely weather, fun things to do, good food.
Great. Great.
Gets.
Maybe we'll hear from some of them today.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I did say repeatedly, now you all pick up the phone and call us.
Yes. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yes. Well, several of them have. I don't know if they're from Pennsylvania or New York, and we'll find out.
All right.
Hey, our next caller, you're on Open Air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Michelle from Colorado.
All right. How are you?
Good. It's nice and sunny here. Congratulations on the rain.
Oh, thank
you. I know
you
need
it. Thank you. Yeah, yeah, we so desperately do. Thank you. What's going on in your world?
I'll give you a little content here.
Okay.
And then I just hope to receive a new perspective or a little guidance.
Okay. We'll do our best.
Okay. Well, My mother has, we moved, my husband and I moved her here. She was a very independent person, and she's 88 now, and she's now confined to a wheelchair and somewhat senile, but still there's a lot of sharpness to her.
Mm-hmm.
We tried at first to have her in assisted living, but that didn't work. She fell too many times, and now we've moved her to a nursing home. And for about a year, we were just pretty amazed at her acceptance of that. But now she really hates it. And she's kind of got this attitude of, I just have to buck up. And then, of course, she breaks down because, you know, you're resisting those emotions so much. And then other times she's, you know, when we do things with her, she's overly gratuitous. Like she'll say, I'm her savior, and then I feel really, I kind of clamp up.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll say things like, I'm not worth anything to anyone. And, of course, I tell her, you know, that, of course, she's worth, you know.
Everything.
That's not what her value is, and she's worthwhile to me, and et cetera. But, so here's what the voices tell me.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I were a better daughter, I'd have her live here with me. I need to be more compassionate when I'm with her, be a more compassionate presence. I'm too guarded. I don't share enough of myself. I need to find something to give her meaning. I should go out and try to find a better place. Maybe she would be happier there. If she were more awakened, then she might be able to accept this better. So
May I ask you something about that?
Sure.
When those voices speak to you, can you tell me what they actually say?
I thought I was. But
well,
it doesn't
you're kind of. I'm wondering if you are sort of reporting what you've concluded about them rather than the exact language that you hear that information in.
Oh, okay.
So how do you hear the message, you're too guarded?
How do I hear that? Let's see. You're just very guarded. You need to be more open.
Okay. That's what I was looking for.
Okay.
So that I-you distinction that I make.
Uh-huh.
Where, and that's what I was looking for was, is there somebody in you, the daughter, who is talking to herself about this? You know, I just, sort of like you explained it to me, you know, I just feel so guarded when I'm around her. And she says those things, and I just feel really uncomfortable with it. And I feel sort of guilty and that sort of thing. That's one experience. What
yes.
you just reported was someone pointing out your flaws.
Right.
You're this way. You should be more that way. If you were a better person, you would do this. If you should, what you should be doing is what you need to. So there's somebody talking to you.
Uh-huh.
And telling you, judging you, and criticizing you.
Right.
And so, of course, that's what we talk about as self-hatred, voices of self-hatred.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. And it's really so critical to recognize the difference, because if it were that person saying, you know, I just don't want to be that way with my mother. I want to work on whatever arises in me that needs to keep her at a distance. We don't have that much more time. And I want us to be as close. That's, you know, that's somebody that you want to say, okay. Well, I'll help you do that. Let's work on that. Let's see
mm-hmm.
what that is. But that you voice that is taking advantage of a very vulnerable time in someone's life to really get her. So there you are with your very fragile elderly mother, and self-hatred just starts circling for the kill.
Yeah.
Can you picture it?
Yeah.
And that there's nothing to be done about that except recognize it for what it is and know that you don't have to participate.
Okay.
It's not true. It's not valid information. It doesn't take you anywhere. It's not going to help your mother. It's not going to help you. It's just hateful. It's just being mean to somebody when they're in a vulnerable position.
Yeah. Even this voice, which sort of disguises itself as being an adult and knowing, says, if I were more compassionate to myself, I could be that for her.
Well, and how does it feel? How does that information feel to you?
Well, it doesn't feel loving or kind.
Okay. Because it could be, couldn't it?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah. It would be very possible for somebody who really loved you to say, you know, if you were more gentle with yourself, if you weren't so hard on yourself, maybe you wouldn't, you know, we can picture somebody who really loved you saying those kinds of things to you. But you can tell if there's an edge to it, if it's meant to be a kind message or if it's really just twisting the knife, but it's slippery, it's slimy. You know, there's just the all-out, I hate you, and that's all there is to it. And
uh-huh.
Then there's the, well, you know, sure, you could do that, but, you know, you've never been a very talented person. And it can take you a minute to catch on that, wow, that's a really ugly message, even though the voice has a little softer tone to it.
Yeah, yeah. So also, you know, when I have these feelings of not being around her or not wanting to, you know, wanting my own time, then I feel guilty as well. You know, like she's always dependent on me emotionally, I say to myself, and, you know, yikes, I don't want to be caught up in this.
Yeah, I have a curiosity question.
Okay.
Now, what you described is that she was in this place and she was fine, and then all of a sudden she wasn't. Do you have a sense that something changed, or did she just get tired of it, or what do you think?
At first, when we had to move her to the nursing home, there were issues with hydration, so I don't think she was all there, and I think she felt kind of grateful to be taken care of. But now that she's been there and she's a little bit more with it, just being confined to a wheelchair and being in an institution, the whole thing has gotten to her.
Okay, and now the second question, what do you think is realistic about this?
You mean her situation?
Is it the case that this reticence that you have, or this, however you would want to describe that, is it keeping you from being there as much as you would want to be there if you weren't having that reaction? Or is it that you're given your life where you are, where she is, you're really doing your part. You really are, you know, you're doing fine with this, and it's just a matter of the voices would say whatever you did wasn't enough.
I think the voices would say whatever I did, it wasn't enough.
Uh-huh.
And then the other part of it is I would like to be more present with her, however that means. Maybe it's not trying to fix things, but just being a compassionate presence.
Okay.
Instead of going over there and feeling, help.
Yeah.
I want out of here.
Yeah. And so, go ahead.
No, that's it.
Do you think you could take that on as a project?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So there's your workshop, right?
Okay.
So if you come to a Zen awareness workshop, we would do all kinds of things, and you would watch to see what happened.
Uh-huh.
Because what you would be looking to see is there's something there, body, emotions, mind, there's something stuck, there's some conditioning, there's something going on that is the cause of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So as you watch, you listen, you pay attention, you're doing whatever, and then pretty soon you realize, oh my gosh, that's what it is. And
mm-hmm.
in that moment of realization, of course, things just kind of turn loose. And you have
mm-hmm.
a little more space around it. You realize,
mm-hmm.
oh, well, gosh, that part of me feels like such and such, or I'm feeling whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my encouragement to you, to
yeah.
go there as a workshop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can approach it any way you want. You take a little notebook with you.
Uh-huh.
Or a little recorder or something like that, and take little breaks and keep track of what's going on in your body. Where do you feel tension and tightness? You know, what's going on with your breath? What's going on with your heartbeat? You know, are your palms sweaty, or you know, any of those kinds of physical things? And what goes on with you emotionally, and especially.
Mm-hmm.
What are the voices saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you just keep track of it. And the attitude of mind is it's really hard to describe it because it sounds like an intellectual or an analytical process, and it's not. It's going there with a question in your whole being. And the question
mm-hmm.
is, what? What? What's going on here? What is this? And
mm-hmm.
and your mind can be completely disengaged from that question. It's an awareness question.
Okay. So really just taking it out of the mind and being aware of all of your senses, your body, your emotions.
Yes.
And going
that question, if your mother were really agitated about something and she wasn't able to tell you, maybe even during that time when she was experiencing dehydration and was disoriented and that sort of thing, and you're there with her and that's the question, what is this? There's something going on here. What
uh-huh.
is it? And with that kind of attitude of mind, very often we will start getting some intuitive answers that
yeah.
give us a little more a little more distance and some clarity and some freedom.
Hmm. Yeah. I can see that, and I don't want to I think I need to go in with that.
Mm-hmm.
But just as you before that when you were talking, I just got this little tingle in my stomach about maybe what's causing the suffering is just my being guarded, that I go over there so guarded that that's causing me a lot of suffering right there.
Yes, and one of the things that can be helpful with that is to see if you can get to know the person who feels guarded.
Okay.
Do a little dialoguing with her, a little,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe a little back and forth journaling, in that same with that same attitude of, I want to know what's going on. You know,
okay.
Is it fear? Is it guilt? Is it remorse? Is it obligation? Is it? It's okay. Whatever it is, mm-hmm. If we know what it is, we can work on it together.
Okay.
And then you'll
sounds
let
good.
Us know what you find, won't you?
I will.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Thank
you
very
much, Sherry.
Uh-huh.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Hello, my name is John March, and I'm the leader of a music project called the Zen Blues Quartet. For the last few years, this collaboration of some of the best musicians in the world has been gathering to record and perform as a way of showing our gratitude and love for the music of the blues. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a couple more callers lined up here.
All right.
Next caller, you are on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George from Pennsylvania.
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you doing?
Well, interesting project, this life.
Isn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
An interesting retreat we're on here.
Yeah. It's kind of every moment is an opportunity to practice life.
Yes. And to, an opportunity to see what is between us and life, what kind of illusions are being maintained that are attempting to keep us separate from life.
Right now I'm feeling a lot of anxiety, depression, just ugh. And the voices are, you know, circling for the kill. You know, they really want this is where you see this is who you really are, and this is the way it really is, and this is and I've noticed that a pattern that I hadn't really noticed exactly this way before, and it seems like the same voice that's now beating me up for not being good enough, not being the right person, so on and so forth, is somehow the same voice that when I'm feeling good tells me how well I'm doing, how spiritually advanced I am, how special I am.
Hmm. I'm quite confident that that's true.
What's that?
I feel quite confident that that's true.
Yeah. And it's as though... Fortunately, that's not the only voice that's going on. There's also definitely the voice of the mentor that is reassuring and positive in not a, I guess you would say, ego-reinforcing way, but just a way of a much, much deeper way. But it's interesting to see the difference between those two voices.
Between the mentor and the one the ego reinforcing voice.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Well, it's we're fond, as you know, in this practice of what we call reassurances. And people will say, well, reassurances, now isn't that just an affirmation and you just don't want to call it that?
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between the two is critical. An affirmation is something that you don't believe is true and nobody else believes is true, but you just say it hoping that somehow magically it'll be true.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a reassurance is true.
Right.
And what the only reason that, in this case, you are not accepting the truth of it is the voices of self-hatred.
Right.
Because when you're at center, you know it's true. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
things like you're a good person.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the best person.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the most wonderful person. You're not the most handsome person. That's an affirmation. That's, no, I don't think that that's true. No, in fact, that's
mm-hmm.
not true. But maybe if I say it often enough, it'll become true.
Mm-hmm.
But you're
mm-hmm.
a good person? Yeah, unarguably, you are a good person.
Right.
And that's where the mentor is. The mentor
mm-hmm.
is not going to
mm-hmm.
schmooze you. The mentor says you're equal to your life. You're
yeah.
up to the task. You can do this, and I'll be here to support you.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a person that you identified several conversations ago that is, well, here's this person caught in this nightmare of, oh my God, everything's awful, and what I'm experiencing right now is I notice the voice of self-hate coming in, and everything that I focus on, the voice of self-hate comes in and says, there's another example of, you know, why you're not good enough or why you're not doing enough or why you, whatever. There's always, that voice just comes right in on just about every perception. And not like automatically.
Hmm.
And so this person that this voice is talking to is feels terrible. And is caught in this nightmare of, oh my God, everything's wrong, nothing's right, you know, I can't do anything right, I'm not the right person, awful stuff. And then, you know, they're stepping back from that and being in a place of awareness and seeing that going on and realizing what's going on. And then there's this other person that you identified before, the person who's not caught in the nightmare, not the person who sees it for what it is, it's the person who wants to suffer over it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Someone who's not in it wanting to claim it as the only reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the illusion of a separate self.
The illusion of a separate self. That's what that is.
Yeah. And it's in one hand is the suffering, and in the other, the self-hatred.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So isn't it awful? And by the way, it's your fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a painful, painful way to get to that awareness.
Oof. Incredible. Incredible. You know, all the voices are saying, oh, so you've been here before, and, you know, this is not working, and practice isn't working, and nothing you're doing is working, and why don't you give up, and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Same old stuff.
Yep. Same old stuff.
Yeah.
Just so hateful.
Oh, unbelievable.
Cool.
So it'll be very interesting to see what, how I, in quotes, it's not really I, just to see what happens this time around. Because
yes. Yes.
It's going to be different. It's already different.
Yeah, and it's going back to that place, because I want to back up here a little bit, because I think it's so important that you identified that the positive voice is simply on the other end of this continuum from the, in quotes, negative voice. And so what you're left with is, here's this guy who feels terrible. And there's really nothing you can do for him. I mean, you can't fix him. You can't change him. But you can be with him, and you can be unconditionally loving with him, and you can protect him from that hatefulness. That much you can do.
Yeah. Do you have any hot tips on how to do that?
Well, I think about the previous caller and the mother. And there's the mother in the wheelchair. You know, going from being an active, busy person in charge of stuff and making things happen, and then before a person knows it, they're old and now in a wheelchair and in this very sort of confined life. And what are we going to do? There's no reversing that. There's no changing or fixing that. That's the way it is. And yet, it's possible. And it would be possible for us, but it would be possible for the mother too, assuming one day we find ourselves in that position, to be there as a loving, supportive, kind presence in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Not kind of hanging on and waiting until something changes. Because often in life, there is no change. It's not going to change. And, of course, that's the killer that you've described. So the anxiety, the depression, whatever it is, lifts. And there's this feeling of, oh, thank God that's over.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a depressed person on the planet who doesn't go to that, oh, thank God that's behind me, and that hope / belief that that's it, it's over, it's done, we've gone through it, I've gotten through the other, but it's not over. You know, it's gonna cycle around.
Mm-hmm.
and to realize that that's what's going on. Sometimes I feel great, sometimes I don't feel great, and my relationship with myself, there's a way in which when I feel great, I can actually be more casual in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But when I don't feel well, then that's the time to come in full bore with all the loving kindness and compassion and gentleness and understanding and support and nurturing that that we can find.
Yeah.
And again, I am convinced that that's the point of what we're doing. The point is not to get that guy to feel better, because that guy's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I mean, hopefully not soon, but we're all on our way out. The only thing that really matters is how we are with ourselves in that process. So when he's having a really, really hard time, that's your best opportunity to find out how to be there for someone who is suffering.
Yeah.
That's what transforms you.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting him to the point where he feels great and you can kind of cruise. I mean, that's it's fun. It's lovely when life provides that for us, but it doesn't seem to me to be the point.
Yeah.
So I can go for a walk in the park, and that's great. And how would I do if I got lost in the woods somewhere? That there. That's the experience I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not interested in protecting myself so that I never get lost.
Yeah.
I'm interested in being all right when I am lost, because one of these days I will be.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. And it's just doing everything you can. There's caring for the guy who doesn't feel well, and then there's caring for the guy who's caring for the guy who doesn't feel well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's just step back, offering compassion at every turn for anybody who's there. Kind of outgo the principles, outgo the standards, outgo everything. What do you need?
Yeah.
What do you need? I'm there.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know you will take good care of yourself. Best you can.
Sure will.
All right. Thanks, George.
Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was very inspiring.
Oh, it's just such a... We're such doggone heroes. And we just don't, you know, we don't give ourselves and one another enough credit for that.
Yes.
Why? Being a human being is not an easy proposition.
Yes. I almost have tears in my eyes here. It's great to be, it's great to be reminded of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Transform Your Life is one of my favorite things in the world. I just love it. And so many of the quotes in it speak to that sort of, I wish I could remember specifically the one about everybody you meet remembering. The essence of it is every time you meet somebody, remember that they're probably having a hard time.
Yes.
You know, that life is probably not everything they wish it were. And it's an amazing thing when I've just been on retreat a lot. And being on retreat, what we get to see of one another is, okay, we walk in, we all look fine, and we are, you know, we're fine, we're put together, we can pass, you know, we're doing a good job. And then right below the surface, really difficult, painful things are going on in people's lives. And to remember that when we meet somebody, if somebody's a little cranky or crabby or didn't quite do it the way we wanted it done, just to stop and think, I don't know what kind of burden that person is carrying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're going through right now in their life. Maybe they are just so far exceeding any expectations we would ever have for them if we really knew their circumstances.
Yes.
Yeah, and those little quotes in that book just take me there so often. The reminders to be kind and to be patient and to offer understanding and sympathy. It's good.
Fabulous. My experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we have one caller on hold. I want to give out the phone number. That's 888-4-SANGHA. 888-472-6442. We'd love to hear from you. Sherry, I'm going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porch Dog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, you ready for the next caller?
I am.
Yeah, your next call, you are on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Well, hello, this is Steve in Raleigh.
Hi, Steve. From where?
Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh, North Carolina. How are you doing?
Good. Not too long ago, I was there in the mountains with you at the retreat.
Uh-huh.
It was a great experience. And now I have a new practice opportunity. I got downsized last week.
Oh, dear.
Lost my job.
Just out of the blue?
Well, there were rumblings. The company has had troubles. They had announced a 10% cut worldwide. And, you know, 10% of a group of 8, I thought, well, you know, that's part of a person. But actually, they got 2 of us. So there's a young man that sits next to me. He's the same age as my son. And we both started working there the same day, and we both got laid off the same day. So.
Oh, my goodness. And so what?
Well, you know, this happened to me several years ago, about 3 years ago now. And at that time, I had been pretty much, well, for every minute of the time I was on some company payroll since getting a BS degree. So it was sort of a big change. And it took me about 10 months to find a job. Learned a whole lot about that process of doing, you know, all the things you have to do to job hunt. So this time, it isn't quite as big a shock. And I think that doing the meditation makes a big difference.
Uh-huh. A big
difference. Oh, huge difference. The last time I was wrapped up in worry just about every minute of every day.
Kind of a what's going to happen to me? What do I do now?
Well, there was what do I do now? There were, besides the job hunting, there were other things going on financially and a breakup of a marriage and different things that were already in process. There were a big, you know, piling on. But it seemed like my mode of operation was to worry about the biggest thing until I had a plan for that and then worry about the next biggest thing and then burn out on that and worry about the next, you know, on all the way down the line.
Uh-huh.
And now I notice myself, a lot of these things come to me and I'm sort of letting go of them right away because worry doesn't seem to really.
You know that worry is in fact not preparation.
Right. Yes.
Uh-huh.
It's not.
Yeah. So you're using the practice to stay present with yourself as you kind of make this adjustment.
Yeah, and I think that I'm noticing things that are going on that I was unaware of. But, you know, it's difficult to go back in time. I know there was stuff that was buried the last time that probably held me back.
Uh-huh.
There's a voluntary agreement that you sign to get your severance pay. Now, if I hold $100 in my back pocket and say, once you sign this paper, you can have it, is that voluntary? It's sort of a coercive thing they do because they would just like a clean break and make sure they're not going to be sued, and that's fine. But the separation agreement left out bonus, just didn't mention it. And so I kind of had to go around with my contact at the HR department and said, you know, if I sign this, it says I've got all my compensation, but you didn't mention bonus. I said, well, the agreement won't be rewritten. I said, well, on the other document, you said that you'd pay bonus. So do you intend to pay bonus? Well, yes, we do. I said, well, how about putting it in this agreement? Well, we're not going to rewrite the agreement. And I kind of got to the end of that and figured out, well, the nicest thing to do for myself is to get them to pay me that money. And the way to do that is to sign the agreement and hope they pay the bonus. So I just did that and I went over there. And, you know, it's really interesting that you mentioned that quote from your book, because that was just a few weeks ago that I remember reading that for the day. Be kind to that person because he's carrying a heavy load. That's what I was thinking of when I shook that guy's hand, because, you know, he was really being difficult with me. But I signed the paper, I gave it to him, shook his hand, said thank you, and I'm done with that.
Yeah. And you don't have to agonize.
Oh, no. Agonize is over.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does seem to me that's the best we can do. Because life circumstances are what life circumstances are. But we don't have to suffer over them.
Well, this is the first time I called in, so that's why you're probably hearing some silence from my end. Thanks for listening to that.
Yeah, and when did this happen, Steve?
The layoff event was last week Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
You know, another thing happened. They said, call right away. There's an outplacement firm to help you. Okay, so I called. They made me an appointment. They said there's a Tuesday, Wednesday seminar. It's all day, 8 to 5, 2 days. And they gave me directions in an email. So then the email came and it said Thursday and Friday. So I called. I said, wait a minute. We talked about Tuesday and Wednesday. This says Thursday and Friday. Which one is it? She said, oh, you can go to Tuesday, Wednesday. I'll just note it down here. I said, okay. So, but I didn't read which Tuesday and Wednesday. So I showed up there today, which is Tuesday, and I went in and they said, you're here. Oh, it's not till 10 o'clock, but you can go in and make yourself comfortable and have coffee. Okay. So I went, sat and read the paper, and at 10 o'clock, I went through this whole big thing with two other guys, and no one was there from my company. And so we got about halfway through, and I asked a question. And the lady running the little session there said, well, we'll check on that after we get done here. So I got the whole orientation toward the thing, and I was there the wrong week. I was supposed to be there next. So I get to go back next Tuesday and Wednesday for the full two-day deal. But I already have my introduction. Now, at one time, I would have been very embarrassed by that, because I made a mistake.
Uh-huh.
Didn't bother me one bit today. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yes. A real benefit of not having that dysfunctional, there's another word for it, codependent relationship with self-hatred. That would result in, you made a mistake, what's the matter with you, they think you're an idiot, I can't believe you did that. And without that relationship, it's just like, huh. Well, that was entertaining.
Yeah, I get a little entertainment out of it.
So it's next week that you actually go and do the thing?
Yeah. I kind of have other resources to draw on, things that, you know, contacts I made the last time I job hunted, so I can get started. Next week will be good because there will be my friends that I work with. They laid off, probably 30 or 40, maybe 50 people. So.
Oh. Well, I wish they all had your internal resources. And I send you great good wishes for success in this latest life workshop.
Well, you already helped me on it.
Good. Well, keep us posted, huh?
I sure will.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for joining us, Steve. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have one more caller, and we have about 5 minutes left here.
Right.
Caller, you're on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Karen from Northern California.
Hey, Karen.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Well, all right.
Okay, that's good. What's going on?
I thought I'd kind of report back. I've called a couple times, and I called, I'm not sure how long ago it was, maybe 6 weeks or so, talking about how I really had to stay with my breath, because when I ventured out, I was just sort of getting hammered by my conditioning, and it was that going farther, faring worse kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been practicing along, and it actually kind of settled into, there was a lot of anxiety, and what it's kind of settled into is what I would call depression. And so I don't know if I was trying to stay with my breath to not let it get there, or anyway, I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure what happened, but that seems where I ended up, and then and that kind of seems okay. It seems like it was better than what was going on before. I kind of got to the point where I thought, well, if this is depression and this is sort of what I was trying to hold off, this isn't that bad. I could live like this. I mean, I can still do things and, you know, live my life, but there's just sort of this depression, I guess.
And what's the depression like? What does it feel like?
It's teary, and it's heavy in the body, kind of, and a kind of a hopeless outlook, and which actually was okay once I just accepted that things felt hopeless. It's like, okay, it's just, but that's what it feels like.
And when the voices talk to you, do they tell you anything about the content of this, or?
There's themes. There's a lot of themes, and it seems like it can attach to anything, but money has been a big one, and that's been a big one, and then I think overwhelm has been a big one, and but I can generally kind of, whatever I look at, it could pick up is content, pretty much. You know,
okay.
It's kind of the eyes I'm looking out of.
Yeah, and so a lot of it is physiological.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That heaviness and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And those sensations mean hopeless. I mean, there's not a lot of energy. Everything is heavy and, not a lot of joy, not a lot to look forward to, nothing really going on.
Yeah, although I can move out of it. It seems like I move in and out of it.
And you can move out of it volitionally?
Well,
or do you just
turn
up outside of it?
I can, like when I go to work,
uh-huh.
it disappears. And
when you get busy?
Yeah, when I'm busy, and I've always been a person that likes to stay busy and work a lot. So that, or if I'm, I had a big weekend this weekend, and you know, I was fine then, but the minute I got home, it was there again.
Now, is there something concrete or specific that you're not accepting, not facing?
Well, I'm trying to look at that and say,
not that you know of, though. I mean, it's
Not that I know of, but it
uh-huh.
feels almost like it's, there's been a lot of fear around money and around, nothing's happened. Well, a little bit has happened, a little bit has changed financially, but I'm really doing fine. But there's been a lot of fear,
okay.
Maybe, yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Is this following a particularly expansive time?
Yeah, it was actually. It did.
Uh-huh, because, boy, that's
mm-hmm.
the way it sounds to me. I know that place so well. I it's one of those things that there are certain subjects that I would love to take surveys on just to see if other people are like this.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is that I can feel really rich, you know, I'm a rich person.
Mm-hmm.
And a week later, nothing has changed, and I'm poor.
Yeah.
Do you know that one?
Yeah.
And I've always wondered sort of what goes on with that when nothing has changed, and yet the experience of oneself is so different. And, of course, in this practice, we talk about different aspects of the personality coming in and that sort of thing. So a person
mm-hmm.
who feels poor would logically follow a person who felt very expansive and wealthy. But until we start looking at it, what we're taught to believe is there has to be some sort of content that goes with it. You know, you can't just go from being rich to being poor without either spending money or losing money, or something has to happen.
Yeah.
And yet it's not true. I've noticed that that's the case. When you talk about that, the way you describe it, I wonder if this is, in fact, a reaction by conditioning to well-being.
Well, you know, it did follow a really expansive, very relaxed in the body time. So, you know, kind of a couple weeks actually. But there's another component, and I don't know why I couldn't see this when you asked me, but it has to do with this. It feels almost a driven sense of wanting to get my affairs in order and wanting to simplify my life, if I could say, and somehow wanting to get my affairs in order, simplify my life, and get sort of organized and and it's all tied up with the money thing too.
And you're not. This is not. You're not getting premonitions of death or anything like that.
No, I'm not. I don't think I'm not. But
yeah.
I've had a fair amount of that kind of thing, those kind of changes in my life over the last few years, but none of them, nothing has happened to me, and I'm healthy.
Okay. All right. I am sensitive to the fact that we are running out of time.
Okay.
And Michael, is that the case?
Yes, and with the system, we're welcome to talk for a few more minutes. If that's...
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to encourage Karen in a couple of ways and then ask for a report even as early as next week. Okay?
Okay.
One is, do you exercise?
Well, I have been because that was one of the things that you had talked to me about, and I have been making a big effort and sometimes a couple times a day.
Okay, good.
And
does that seem to have any effect?
Well, I just love it. I mean, mostly I just get out and walk and hike, and that's pretty much what I do. And in the moment when I'm doing it, it's pretty hard to feel bad when I'm walking.
Yeah. And then that heaviness kind of sinks in.
Yeah, and I wake up with it in the morning.
Yeah.
I wake up into it.
Yeah.
And then I get out of bed, and then it feels better. But, boy, it's just there at my heels.
Yeah, yeah. It's
constantly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's that. You can tell that would have been my encouragement again. So it sounds like you're doing what needs to be done and just keeping an eye on it. I keep thinking of this, so I'm going to say it. Dancing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you did say that before, and I have to say I didn't do that. So,
I always like it when the same things come to me. So
yeah.
It makes me feel like I'm on track with something here.
Okay.
So let's go with that one, too.
Okay.
And just see. And,
all right.
Yeah, boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty.
And we'll talk before long.
Okay, thanks, Sherry.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. Thank you, Sherry. That was very interesting.
Thank you, Michael. And we will talk again soon.
Yes.
Maybe Karen will call us.
That would be great.
Yep.
And I always like to hear when people check in again.
I do. Yeah, I do too. Yeah, it's good. And especially when somebody's in a process like that that's just going boom, 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 boom. It's good for us to follow along.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.